Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network for this Monday, March the 4th, 2024. Thank you for joining us. I'm Tim Wildman with Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Tim.
And Chris Woodward.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brother Chris. A lot to talk about today, and the big news out of the Supreme Court regarding President Trump and whether he can be knocked off the ballot in various and sundry states. If you can have sundry states, but we'll talk about that momentarily. But first of all, wanted to mention that we lost a member of our team, Ron Cook, here at American Family Radio. Ron passed away on Saturday evening, suddenly, and he was 72 years old. Ron's from Illinois originally. Some people who listen to us in the Quad Cities in Illinois, who go way back, will remember Ron as a station manager there. And then he came here 15 years ago.
Yeah. Is that? At least that, yeah.
15 years ago or 17. Mm-hmm. He moved from Illinois to Tupelo to go to work for us here on our staff here at our home base. And he was a voice you would hear on a lot of announcements, a lot of
public service announcements, churches holding events. He was the voice that did that.
Yeah. Ron, anyway, Ron, very friendly fella, and did good work for us here and was well-liked by our whole staff.
Absolutely. He was a man that always had the praise of the Lord on his lips.
Yeah.
And it had a tremendous servant attitude.
Yeah.
Besides doing the work that you talked about, he made the popcorn every morning.
He made the popcorn. He kept the vending machines stocked.
And
whatever needed to be done, Ron was willing to do it.
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly. He did devotion a few months ago, if it's been that long, and he told us that he had been diagnosed, and he was going through some things, and his message was, God's got this.
Yes.
And, I thought of that when I got the news over the weekend that he had gone home to be with the Lord, because now God's got him.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, Ron will be missed here by our team, our staff, 72 years old, and Ron Cook passed away on Saturday evening. As I said, suddenly he had been receiving treatments for cancer, anyway, we don't know cause of death exactly,
right.
but it happened suddenly on Saturday night, and his family lives in Illinois, and they're coming down to make arrangements, for his funeral service and such.
Yep.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues. All right, Jenna Ellis, our constitutional attorney here, she and Abraham Hamilton are two attorneys that are constitutional attorneys. Well, Steve Crampton, too, stops by occasionally. We're going to visit with Jenna as soon as we can about the announcement.
Big announcement.
What was the big announcement, Chris?
Yeah, and this is not only a domestic story, it's international because BBC's doing wall-to-wall coverage with it as well. But the Supreme Court today handed former President Donald Trump a complete victory against efforts to keep him off primary ballots in states such as Colorado, Illinois, and Maine. In a 9-0 decision, the justices ruled a day before the Super Tuesday primaries that states cannot invoke a post-Civil War constitutional provision to keep presidential candidates from appearing on ballots. That power resides with Congress, the court wrote in an unsigned opinion. Again, a 9-0 decision. We all thought Trump would probably win. We were kind of guessing as to how they might rule on this 7-2, 8-1, but it was 9-0, meaning people that Barack Obama put on the court ruled in Trump's favor today.
Well, this was clearly ridiculous to me, the very idea of it. But, hey, Jenna is on now. Jenna Ellis joins us. Jenna is a host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning, and she's also a constitutional attorney and joins us now. Good morning, Jenna.
Good morning. What a great day for the Constitution.
Yeah, talk about it. You and I were texting last night. I said 9-0. You said, well, 9-0, 8-1 probably would be the score in terms of the score as it relates to the Trump and the three states, at least. Colorado was the one who initiated this. Was this the Colorado State Supreme Court that did this?
Yes.
Yes, and it is a great smackdown for the Colorado Supreme Court, and that state, which is my former home state, has become so liberal, so leftist in so many regards. This is just the latest smackdown. We remember 303 Creative, Masterpiece Cake Shop. I mean, Colorado has basically been a testing ground for the liberals trying to reinvent the U.S. Constitution, and the Supreme Court keeps telling them no, which is exactly the procedure that the Constitution provides, that the judiciary stops lawfare or politics from overriding the rule of law.
What was the, correct me if I'm wrong here, or set me straight, Colorado Supreme Court basically said, or in essence said, or literally said, President Trump was responsible for an insurrection, and therefore, by according to which amendment is it, the 13th? Which one?
The 14th.
They cited the 14th Amendment.
The 14th Amendment.
The 14th Amendment they use that to try to define that as an insurrection, a legal insurrection, and that's what they were basing their opinion off of.
Yeah, so Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is called the Insurrection Clause, which basically is a provision that provides a penalty for any officers, and there are specific officers listed in the federal government, that if they were found to participate in an insurrection, they could be excluded from holding that federal office. President Trump argued that the president is not one of those officers that is listed. That also came up during the oral argument. But also what the Supreme Court ended up holding primarily is that Section 3 and the 14th Amendment as a whole is not self-executing, meaning that it needs enabling legislation from Congress, because Section 5 of the 14th Amendment gives that power to Congress. And the only divergence here in opinion among the nine justices, the three liberals, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson, said that they didn't think that the majority of the court needed to actually reach that question of whether only Congress could enforce the 14th Amendment, because that wasn't really a question. And typically the Supreme Court won't opine on anything that is not a ripe question before the court. I disagree with that concurrence. I think that it was absolutely proper that the court said that, because otherwise you might get a lot of states that will try to enforce that, or the executive branch of even the federal government, or an executive secretary of state that will try to then enforce it by, you know, other types of enabling executive actions or state legislation. So it was a ripe issue before the court in that sense, even though, you know, obviously there hasn't been enabling legislation. But the bottom line here is that the 14th Amendment among conservatives has always been questioned and argued as a huge expanse of federal authority that has overridden a lot of state sovereignty in a way that really has been very bad for the country. And so this particular opinion from the Supreme Court is restraining a lot of, you know, these types of errant opinions, and was ultimately very, very good for the country. I'm an advocate overall and separately of either repealing or at least modifying the 14th Amendment, because I think I'm one of those people that think that even though I understand the Reconstruction Amendments and the purpose of the time, the 14th Amendment has been so perverted, and we've seen how it was tried to be in this case, that we really need to return to the principle of federalism and state sovereignty.
Jenna, it's Fred here. I think maybe a lot of people don't understand, if the court had ruled with the Colorado Supreme Court, isn't it true that then states that are run by Republicans could have turned around and said, hey, we don't like what Joe Biden has done on the border. He's guilty of not doing his job of protecting the country. So we think he shouldn't be on the ballot. There was a real danger here if the court had gone the other way.
Yes, and the court referred to that as kind of a quote-unquote patchwork kind of analysis in their majority opinion and in this per curiam opinion, by saying they didn't want this sort of patchwork for the country, to say that different states get to decide decide arbitrarily and unilaterally who is on their ballot and who isn't based on this very vague concept of what constitutes an insurrection. And so they were very worried about that and wanted a uniform ruling so that the entire country under the same principle for the presidency.
Let me ask you one other question, Jenna. This is speculation. I understand that. Maybe I shouldn't even talk about it, but I'll bring it up anyway. So I won't listen to my own voice of restraint here. If President Trump is convicted in the J6 trial, that's a federal trial, if he's convicted of one or multiple felonies, wouldn't the argument to take him off the ballot in various states be much stronger? Or no?
Not under this ruling.
Okay.
That's a great question. Because what the Supreme Court said, and this is why I think it was a ripe question, Congress has to provide specifically enabling legislation for the insurrection clause to have any force or effect. And so importantly, President Trump has not been charged with insurrection in any of the 91 counts over multiple indictments.
Okay, that's important that's important to note, because that's a misunderstanding among the general public, I think. Go ahead.
Yeah, and so he's not been charged with insurrection. So even though there was a civil finding in a separate civil case that President Trump wasn't even a party to in Colorado, which was the origin of this whole case that's now gone up to the Supreme Court, none of the indictments are for insurrection. They're for other things. And so two things, even if he's convicted, let's say, on all 91 counts, none of that would apply under the 14th Amendment anyway. But according to this holding now by the Supreme Court, Congress would have to implement legislation that would clearly prescribe a process for invoking the 14th Amendment as a disqualification for the presidency or for any other federal office holder that is subject to Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Congress has not done that yet.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, listen, Jenna, thanks so much. So you're cheering the Supreme Court today, huh?
I am. And you know what? I was very skeptical that it would be an 8-1 or 9-0. And, you know, a few people who are, you know, older and wiser than me, like Jay Sekulow and others, were saying, you know, that they thought it would be. And, you know, Jay was right. And I am very proud and grateful, honestly, to even the liberal justices that sometimes, a lot of times, I disagree with, for putting politics aside. You know, this is not about President Trump. This is about our Constitution. It's about the separation of powers. Yeah. The Supreme Court today did unanimously exactly what they should, which was to hold for our constitutional republic the correct interpretation of the text, regardless of the political fallout. And so mm-hmm. I'm really grateful for our founders, for the Supreme Court, and even to the liberal justices. It's a great day to be an American.
Jay Sekulow called it right. I humbly say I did too. But, you know, 9-0, I thought 9-0. All right. Thank you, Jenna. Appreciate it very much.
You're older and wiser than me, too.
Well,
you're older and wiser than me, too.
I see what you did there. Okay. All right. Thank you, Jenna. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much, Jen. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Jenna Ellis joining us there. Fred?
Yes, former President Trump is due to respond to this, I think, around 11:30 Central this morning. But he did put out a statement. He says this is a great day mm-hmm. for America. And let's remind folks, this comes less than 24 hours from before Super Tuesday. So this is kind of a gift. This is a victory for the Trump campaign. And he heads into Super Tuesday with this victory under his belt. Not probably, a lot of people would say he needs that help, because most of the pundits, the political pundits, are looking at tomorrow. 15 states, I believe, are involved with Super Tuesday. And they're saying it is quite possible that the former president will wrap up. He'll get the delegates that he needs, 1,215 delegates, to put him at the top of the race.
Yeah, that's right. Super Tuesday's tomorrow.
It is.
Chris?
We are going to be
how many states?
Oh, a bunch.
15.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'll Google it here in a second.
Yeah, he
I did have it.
Yeah, he was going to win anyway, but.
Well, Nikki Haley did pull off a win in the D.C. primary in the last few days, so she does have one primary win under her belt. But Trump is favored to win in all of the states.
I don't think she wears a belt. Go ahead. I think I know your metaphor.
Yeah. Sometimes she does.
Yes.
But we have to point out in D.C., they say only 2,000 people voted in the Republican primary, and she won with 1,200 votes.
She did. I can tell you which states and territories are voting tomorrow if you like.
Go.
Alabama, Arkansas, Alaska, California, Colorado, Maine, Massachusetts, Minnesota, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Vermont, Virginia, and American Samoa, which I'm sure is going to be down to the wire.
It'll be Super Wednesday.
Are you going to stay up for that one and report?
I will if Fred tells me to. Yeah, okay. We will be here with radio and print coverage tomorrow night, so do stay with us late into the evening tomorrow for all the breaking news of which states Trump won. Did Nikki Haley, you know, get any support, that kind of thing.
Okay, so Trump responded to Nikki Haley winning the D.C. primary. He said, quote, I purposely stayed away from the D.C. vote because it's the swamp with very few delegates and no upside. This is what Trump said.
I just shared that link for you.
Yeah.
He said, Bird Brain spent all of her time, money, and effort there. Over the weekend, we won Missouri, Idaho, and Michigan. Big numbers. Complete destruction of a very weak opponent. The really big numbers will come on Super Tuesday. So, there you go. You think Trump will quit calling her Bird Brain anytime soon?
Probably. Fred? If he gets the hits that 1,215 delegates by the end of tomorrow night.
He said Bird Brain is a loser.
Yeah.
Record low performance in virtually every state. I enjoy watching the bird disavow her pledge to the RNC and her statement that she would never run against President Trump. He referred to himself in third person.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I don't know. I don't think calling a woman like that names helps him with women voters, but I guess he does. They like it, huh?
That seems to be his character. I don't think they'll be exchanging Christmas cards this year. I really don't. It's gotten kind of nasty. You know, she has basically said recently, and some people have drawn her out on this, is that she has condemned him for his legal problems. Well, his legal problems are the fault of a very biased judicial system. I'll just say that. So to condemn him for being involved with legal problems is like saying that, you know, what's going on in Georgia with Fani and what's going on with the AG in New York, that somehow is Trump's fault.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think tomorrow Trump will likely have a good day tomorrow. There are 874 delegates up for grabs amongst those states and territories tomorrow. So we'll wait and see. But she did have a victory. Going into tomorrow, Trump already has 244 delegates. Haley has 43. So that's where they're starting the race tomorrow.
Yeah, do check our Facebook comments for this show, because I've been sharing links to what Trump said about Haley after the D.C. win. But also I just shared some poll numbers from Real Clear Politics, which compiles all the poll numbers to try to get an idea of where things exactly are going.
Yeah, so then it'll just be a question of, you know, does she continue? And if she continues, talking about Nikki Haley, you know, what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
I guess you could ask the question, what's the point? I guess you could ask her, what's the point? She would say, well, people need an alternative.
Mm-hmm. That's what she has been saying.
Yeah, those who don't want to vote for Trump. Listen, those Republicans who don't want to vote for Trump, I offer them an alternative. That's what she would say. Also, we've talked about this speculation before. You know, she may want to go all the way to the convention, and then, which will be in August, is that right? The Republican National Convention?
I believe so. Mm-hmm.
And maybe she has, what, 20% of the delegates, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
But if something happens to disqualify Trump, I'm just throwing this out here, mm-hmm. or if he gets has a heart attack in June, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's 70, almost 78 years old. Mm-hmm. These kinds of things happen, and she may think, well, I'm going to stay in for the long haul, and who knows, I may end up being the nominee. I'm just guessing.
Yep.
Okay, I'm just guessing.
Mm-hmm. I did here. Just double-check the Republican National Convention this year for 2024 is actually in July, which is earlier than it has been. It's more often than not been in August, but they're going to be in Milwaukee, which is Algonquin for the good land, in July 15th through the 18th in 2024.
Did you just speak in tongues, Chris?
I did not.
Because we don't have an interpreter here. So
that's what Milwaukee
what did
means.
You, what did you call it?
It means it's Algonquin for the good land.
But Wisconsin is?
Milwaukee.
Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. All right.
Didn't even have to wait till Friday, people.
Okay. I did not know that. I did not know that. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Again, the big news is that the Supreme Court has said that states cannot remove Donald Trump from the ballot. Mm-hmm. It was a 9-0 decision.
Yeah.
9-0 decision, which we all celebrate here. All right, next story, Chris.
Well, this story could very well have been the lead, and we'll probably have to carry it over past the break here. But DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas appeared on several television programs over the weekend news programs to field questions about a number of topics, including the murder of the Georgia student who was murdered by what authorities are calling an illegal immigrant. Mayorkas has been blamed for this because the immigrant broke the law to come here. He was in trouble for something in New York, should have been deported, but he wasn't. Later on, he is accused of killing a nursing student at the University of Georgia. Mayorkas was asked about this, and he said, "The person responsible for the murder is the murderer. Don't take my word for it. Listen to clip 11.
Should this man have been deported?
A few thoughts. First, Margaret, first and foremost, an absolute tragedy. And our hearts break for and our prayers are with the family, number one. Number two, and importantly, as a prosecutor, having prosecuted violent crime and other crimes for 12 years, one individual is responsible for the murder, mm-hmm. and that is the murderer."
Okay. Fred, that's not what liberals normally say.
No. If somebody is killed with a gun, it's the guy who sold the gun. It's lax gun laws. That's what the liberals say.
Right.
When there's a shooting at
a
school.
They don't say it's individual alone.
Oh, no. It's always guns. It's gun laws.
Right. Right.
So, no, he's trying to change the narrative here because this man who is charged, he hasn't been found guilty yet, but he came in 2022. That is after, and Mayorkas on the weekend or back a few years ago was praising all the restrictions that the new president, Joe Biden, had lifted.
Yes.
He was praising those.
Right.
So he is responsible. And a lot of people are saying Mayorkas and Biden have blood on their hands.
Well, I think they do, because their callousness here. And they're the ones, both of these fellows, have the ones who have facilitated millions of people coming here illegally since Biden went into the White House. Do we have the audio? We can play this when we get back, if we have it. Do we have the audio?
Of him a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
We do.
Okay. Because what Biden and Mayorkas, is that the way you pronounce
Mayorkas,
his name?
Mayorkas, yes.
Now, he's the Homeland Security?
Correct.
My mama told me not to call people this, but they're liars. Huh?
Yes.
They're bold face
mm-hmm.
liars.
Yes.
On this issue, mm-hmm. they are.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about that when we get back, because what Biden did and what he bragged about and what we're going to hear from this fellow when we get back, when Biden took office, they bragged about opening up the borders. They bragged about it. They said, you know, they were criticizing Trump and they bragged about opening up the borders. We'll be back momentarily.
I'd like to take a minute and have a heart-to-heart with you. If you're able, place your hand over your heart. Can you feel it? My strong heartbeat reminds me that I'm alive. See, it's the same for an unborn baby. Their heart begins to form at conception and at just 3 weeks is already beating. At 5 weeks, a baby's heartbeat can be heard on ultrasound. That's where preborn steps in, rescuing 200 babies every day from abortion, simply by providing a mother with a free ultrasound and allowing her to hear her child's heartbeat and see their perfectly formed body in the womb. By 6 weeks, eyes are forming. By 10 weeks, a baby is able to suck his or her thumb. Preborn needs our help to save these precious souls. For just $28, you could be the difference between the life or death of a baby. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, just dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250, baby, or donate securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Hope you're having a nice Monday. Thank you for listening to AFR. We heard the cough there. Brought to you by Chris.
Slow on the button push.
Hey, it was America First cough, Chris. That's what we appreciate.
Big time. Big leap. Huge.
All right, so just the big news this morning, of course, is the Supreme Court announced 9-0 that Colorado couldn't remove former President Trump from the ballot there. And everybody's celebrating that.
And that applies also to the Secretary of State in Maine.
Maine
did the same thing, and then a judge in Illinois.
Exactly.
Last week.
Now back to this, to the border situation, as it relates to Mayorkas, the Homeland Security, is a secretary.
Mm-hmm. Homeland Security Secretary,
which is a cabinet level position.
It is. That is correct.
You've all seen and heard him. Okay. We want to go back for just a moment to when President Biden took office. The day he took office and the subsequent, 2 to 3 weeks, mm-hmm. President Biden himself and Secretary Mayorkas, they were proud of dismantling everything Donald Trump had done as president to secure our border and to slow down the illegal immigration. And they wanted the world to know. Now they're acting like, well, we can't do anything to stop it. Biden and Mayorkas. But, okay, so what are we about mm-hmm. to hear?
Yeah, this is DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas talking to Nicole Wallace of MSNBC, bragging about the Biden administration.
When is this?
Oh, a couple of years ago. I don't have the exact date.
Okay, you don't have the...
I will share the link in a minute, though.
But it is within 2 weeks, I think, of Biden taking office.
Correct.
Okay, and he's on MSNBC, and here's what this guy says.
Clip 4.
I'd like to understand from you what Trump-era immigration policies have been banned, ended, reversed, and if any investigations are underway by you.
So we have rescinded so many Trump immigration policies, it would take so much time to list them.
Yeah, there you have it.
That was that was their policy in a nutshell.
Yep.
Is that was from September? Okay, September 23rd, so I was incorrect about within a few weeks, but it was September the 23rd, 2021, a few months after Biden had taken office. And this guy is bragging. Mm-hmm. He said there's so many things Trump did on the border, we've taken them all away, and I can't even name the number of them.
Right.
Yeah. But this was all part of Joe Biden's plan. Joe Biden told the nation when he was in the primaries leading up to the election in 2020.
Right.
He told, this is my plan for the border. We have that audio.
Okay.
I would, in fact, make sure that we immediately surge to the border. All those people are seeking asylum. They deserve to be heard. That's who we are. We're a nation that says if you want to flee and you're fleeing oppression, you should come.
Yeah. And so what we have seen over the last 3.5 years was all part of Joe Biden's plan.
Right.
This is not an accident. He invited the world to come to our southern border.
Right. And they're still coming.
Put up your hand and say, asylum, we'll let you in.
Right. Right. Exactly. And now it's backfired.
Yes.
Now it's terrible for our country. We're going to have to suffer the consequences of this colossal mess for years and years to come. And we just talked about the young lady in Athens, Georgia, who was murdered by an illegal immigrant, allegedly. He hadn't had his day in court yet. But this that kind of thing, that crime among illegal people who shouldn't even be in our country in the first place, is increasing, and it's only going to get worse.
Well, and there have been other instances where women were killed by what police called an illegal immigrant. You had the college student in Iowa a few years ago. And then before that, or around that same time, there was a woman out in California that was shot at like a pier or something like that.
It was a man
that was found here.
Yeah, a woman by an illegal man. Yeah. Well, it happens all the time.
And we've seen the videos of New York.
Yeah.
The violence that has occurred there. And we haven't even mentioned the fentanyl that has been allowed to come into this country. And they say thousands of our young people have died.
Yeah. I guess what's really shocking is, if you think about it, is one of the major political parties in this country, namely the Democrats, basically they're for sabotaging our own land.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
With letting millions, and they're not stopping it now.
No.
They're not stopping it now. Letting millions and millions of people come into our country. We don't know who they are. It's only been because this problem is creating pain for New York City and Chicago and Denver and some other places, that they're even talking about it at all. And it's become the number one issue in the country.
Yeah.
And it's hurting the Democrats' chances in November.
And this is why Joe Biden goes to the border last week. He found a quiet place at the border.
Right.
It was, and you don't want to know why it's quiet, is that Governor Abbott of Texas went into Brownsville,
right,
and he stopped it with the barbed wire and the containers. He stopped it, and the illegals moved further west, which is where Donald Trump went to Eagle Pass. So be very clear about this. Now Biden is out there saying it's the Republicans' fault because they're not giving me enough money.
Right. He's saying things like, I don't have the authority.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Remember, what did he say? He said, I don't have the authority to hire any more agents or hire any more border security?
He's claimed he doesn't have the authority to do pretty much anything. You name it, and he'll say he doesn't have the authority. I do have one example.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. This is something Steve cut for us. It's from recent days, and Biden told a reporter, again, he can't do anything about the border. Clip one.
Why are you waiting to take executive action on the border?
Because we need more forces on the border. I don't have the authority to do that.
Okay. Since when has this guy cared about having the authority to do anything?
This is the, it's probably illegal, but it's worth it, president. And that's an actual quote from him.
Yeah. The Supreme Court of the United States says you, Biden, do not have the authority to universally cancel student loans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That are owed the government.
And he's still doing it.
And he said, I don't care what the Supreme Court says. I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
So since when is he said obeyed the idea of separation of powers.
Yeah. I'm sure he wasn't the person that actually does this, because if you're not aware of it, America, oftentimes a politician has somebody that does their social media stuff for them. But in the last couple of weeks, somebody that has control over Joe Biden's X account, what used to be called Twitter, they posted something saying, MAGA Republicans and the Supreme Court told me I couldn't, but I still did. And it was talking about the Supreme Court stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With student loans.
All right. You're listening to Today's Issues. That's the name of this show on the American Family Radio Network. I guess we'll have to wait till later in the year to see if there are any political ramifications for the Democrats in terms of there seems to be a negative. It's a negative issue for them. How much it'll hurt them in November, it kind of remains to be seen.
Well, I'll tell you what, the polls that are coming out just even in the last 2 to 3 days, New York Times polls showing that, roughly 6 in 10 say they're not very or not at all confident in Biden's mental capability. So he has that issue that's going on. The American people know what's going on at the border now. There's no secret anymore.
Right.
Joe Biden has created this crisis. I hope people realize no other country in the world in the world has ever allowed what Joe Biden is allowing on our southern border. They haven't.
Right. No other country in history, nor does it, nor the country on earth does it defend its borders.
No, he invited an invasion of this country.
Right.
That's what he did.
And he got it.
And he got it.
And some people sadly go, well, I'd rather have him than the other guy. So they just go along with it.
Yeah.
Including people in media that won't hold his feet to the fire.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see, you know, what consequences there are to this in November. I do think it's going to hurt. Who wins between Biden and Trump? Who knows? But I do know that this is a big winning issue for Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big winning issue for the Republican Party in general.
Absolutely.
Because it's a big loser for the Democrats. They can't defend this.
It will be interesting to see how the Republicans really craft their message these last few months before the election day, because in 2022, we were all told and we all believed that Republicans were just going to sweep in. It was going to be a big red wave. They were going to overtake everything and kind of bring Biden back to center. Obviously, that didn't happen. And they've lost other races since then. They promised things that they never delivered.
We've talked about this before. Our country's basically 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
It has been since Bush versus Gore. 50-50 the White House, 50-50 the Senate, 50-50 the House. Really, the president, even Obama couldn't do much at all. Nor was Trump able to do much at all. Nor was Biden able to do much at all in terms of legislation. What those presidents have been able to do because of the divided Congress is through executive order only. Pretty much. So we will see again. We'll see what happens going forward. You're listening to today's issues. Next story, Chris.
Let's mention this because Israel is still a big issue, even though it's not necessarily the lead story or even a story you might see in the first half hour of a news program. But Israel continues to go after Hamas in Gaza, and the Biden administration, which in the immediate days following the October terrorist attack in Israel, they were in lockstep agreement with Israel. We got your back all the way. Since then, they've been telling Israel, you got to stop. You're going too far. This is inhumane. All these kinds of things. And Vice President Kamala Harris, who Joe Biden has put in charge of everything on planet Earth, she weighed in on the need for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. And so I've got some audio of her, followed by some reaction from Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina. Clip 6.
The immense scale of suffering in Gaza, there must be an immediate ceasefire.
When the Vice President of the United States meets with a delegation from Israel without the consent of the approval of Netanyahu, our Vice President and this administration is literally undermining our ally Israel. In the face of the greatest attack in 50 years, our ally deserves our full attention, our full support, and standing shoulder to shoulder with no gap in between.
That was Senator Tim Scott.
Mm-hmm.
And so Vice President Harris met with, who did she meet with?
She's meeting with a delegation from one of the parties in Israel without the approval of Prime Minister Netanyahu.
I gotcha.
Yeah, and that's what's going on.
In a time of war.
And that's why Tim Scott is saying at a time of war, she is meeting without the approval of the government of that country. I tell you what, what the Biden administration is now pushing for is a six-week ceasefire. Prime Minister Netanyahu last week said
he can't commit to that.
That would be detrimental to their efforts to wipe out Hamas, and that is the goal of the Israeli government, to wipe out Hamas.
That would only allow Hamas to bring in more weapons or to reorganize.
Hillary Clinton herself said a few months ago, this is a bad idea.
Yes.
Listen, this is a death match. I hate to put it so bluntly. This is a winner-take-all situation. Hamas, are people in Gaza being displaced, and are they caught in a war zone? Yes, that is true. That's an unfortunate situation, very unfortunate situation for those people. But at the same time, Israel wasn't the one who initiated this. This war was started because Hamas went into Israel and slaughtered 1,200 people that day. October the 6th, was it?
October 7th.
October the 7th. They slaughtered all those people. Well, what did you expect was going to happen? Israel is responding, and they're going to continue to respond till they secure the whole area where what happened on October 7th doesn't ever happen again. And they're trying to hunt down all the people who were responsible for October 7th. So is it a humanitarian crisis in Gaza with a couple million people living there? Yes, it is. But you have to wait. But Israel can't concern themselves with that first and foremost. In a time of war, you have to prioritize. And Israel has to defend itself, and they have to do whatever they have to do to take out Hamas.
Yes.
And Hamas's capabilities to wage war. That's really their only objective, and getting the hostages, the ones that remain alive, freed.
You know, Prime Minister Netanyahu has said, Hamas, release all those hostages right now.
Right.
And we'll start to back away.
Right.
You know, the other thing that we have to remind people, because the mainstream media keeps doing this day in and day out, they keep giving the total fatalities in Gaza. I think as of Friday, they were saying 30,000. But as Netanyahu and others have pointed out, they include the Hamas terrorist numbers that are being killed in that, because Hamas terrorists don't dress in uniforms.
Right.
They have civilian garb on.
Yeah.
And so thousands of those that are being killed are Hamas terrorists. They embed themselves within the civilian population. They embed themselves, you know, we have seen proof of this, and even some of the mainstream media have agreed with this, that Hamas uses hospitals for their headquarters. Hamas uses,
sure they do.
Uses schools.
Sure they do. The reason they do that is they know that Israel's hesitant or won't fire on a place where a school is or a mosque is or a hospital is. Why? Because the PR from doing so, Hamas would just say, "Oh, they're bombing a hospital." Mm. Well, that's their cover.
Yes.
That's their cover, so that, you know, so that they're able to do what they want to do, orchestrate their quote government, Hamas, in Gaza, without being targeted, because they know it's kind of like a human shield.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's a human shield. Listen, I know what people on the left, and they're not all on the left, but a lot of people who are. A lot of people on this situation, here's what they would say if they're pro-Palestinian. That's what they would call themselves, or pro-human rights. They're going to say, when I say that Hamas started this, they're going to say, no, Hamas was only by the slaughter of those 11 or 1,200 Israelis that day. They're going to say, no, Israel started this by occupying the land, right?
Mm-hmm.
Occupying the land that belonged to the Palestinians. Okay, we're talking about how many years now, Fred? We're talking about since 1948?
Mm-hmm. That's when Israel became a nation
again.
Okay,
since 1948. Thanks to
a Democratic president.
Yeah, in the United Nations, of all mm-hmm. people, created a state, Israel, a Jewish state, is basically in response to the...
The Holocaust. Yeah.
And they wanted a homeland for the Jewish people, which had traditionally been their homeland.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a state called Palestine.
No.
There wasn't. There wasn't a government called Palestine. This was a British mandate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you did have Jordan there, but there was no Palestine. All right? So the what I'm saying is they're going to say it's the Jews' fault for being in Israel in the first place. I'm just giving you some of the history here. And have there been wars between the Arabs and the Jews? Yes, there's been some big wars over the decades since then, namely the 1967 war. And in war, guess what? To the victor go the spoils. And Israel was able to seize more land because they beat the Arabs in a war.
Mm-hmm.
So they captured all of Jerusalem and some more land, the West Bank area. So Israel is no under no obligation to give this land back, even though. But that's the argument of the people who support the Palestinians. Israel needs to give this land back. That's what Obama was for. He was for moving
1967
borders. Listen, the Jews there in Israel have to defend themselves at all costs. Or guess what? They cease to exist.
That's right.
They will be wiped out. They are surrounded by people who are their enemies. Turkey is not does not border Israel, but they've been threatening Israel. Listen, is it Israel right or wrong? Israel can make mistakes too. They can. I mean, they're human. They can make mistakes too. But you got to understand the defensive posture that they have to take all the time to defend themselves against terrorism and defend themselves against being wiped out. That's the backdrop here. And America has always stood with Israel and their right to exist. But now many in the Democrat Party, probably half the Democrat Party or more now, they're taking the from the river to the sea approach.
Yes.
That means basically Israel is at fault. Israel, the Jews need to be driven out of, because the Jews are committing atrocities against the Palestinians. One other thing about this issue is that you also have to remember that the children, maybe not in all Arab lands, but the children in Gaza and the Palestinian children and the children in some of the Muslim countries that surround Israel, they are taught from the time they are 1 year to 2 years old to hate Jews.
Yes.
In the schools, a lot of them.
Yes.
So can you imagine that kind of brainwashing and propaganda that's all you can remember, you're taught to hate the Jews? And no wonder they commit acts of terrorism. These people are willing to butcher 1,200 people in a day and in the most horrific ways. You can't even describe it without you throwing up. You know what I'm saying? What happened to those people? How does that happen? How can people see be so callous and desensitized? It's because they're raised to hate the Jews from the time they're 1 year's 1 year old.
Remember the quote from one of the Hamas terrorists who did the attack in southern Israel on October the 7th. He was quoted as saying he called his mom and told him he had killed 10 Jews.
Right.
He called his mom to proudly say, "Hey, Mom, I killed."
Right.
And by the way, when Donald Trump was president, he stopped funding the UN agency that's pouring millions of dollars of U.S. taxpayers' dollars into Gaza, because some of the money on the payroll for that relief agency that is now funded by Biden once again, they were Hamas terrorists that were involved in October the 7th. Now stop and think about that. American taxpayers' dollars being used to fund a U.N. agency that runs the schools in Gaza, U.S. taxpayers' dollars being used to help and fund Hamas.
I'll tell you a story. I've told this before. When goes back to when Allison, my wife, and I were in college at Mississippi State University back in the mid-'80s, and she was teaching. We were both students, and she had a part-time job at a kindergarten there. Well, the kindergarten had, international students, children,
mm-hmm.
right? A lot of them. They're all over the world. And one day, Allison came home and she said something. She didn't understand the politics of the Middle East at the time. She said something weird happened today. She said two of my little Arab students, or kids, they weren't students really. They were like 3 and 4 years old. We were having art time, coloring, and she said they drew a picture of a Star of David, And then they drew a picture of guns being shot at the Star of David. This was
40 years ago.
40 years ago, and these were little 3 and 4 year old children, and they were being taught at home, obviously, to hate the Jews.
Mm. Yes.
And that's still going around today in 2024, and I can say that based on a story that the LA Times put out last week where Berkeley High School, the high school in Berkeley, California, there were some students there that were complaining about anti-Semitism and bullying, and one of the things that one kid was subjected to was in an art class where somebody drew a fist busting through the Star of David.
Yeah. Well, it really comes down, do you believe Israel has a right to exist as a Jewish state or not? That's the question.
Yep. Yep.
Do you believe that Israel has a right to exist? Because remember, Hamas and Hamas's charter, they don't believe that Israel has a right to exist.
That's right.
Well, how do you negotiate with somebody who doesn't believe you have a right to exist?
Right.
So we'll be back in 5 minutes with more of today's issues on American Family Radio. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.